The following is a Live the Dream Media production.
How are you doing, Clint?
I'm awesome.
So, quick change of pace, because we are a small and budding company that is kicking some booty in the independent media, but we have to be flexible,
yes,
right?
We do.
So we got David, and I swapped for this one. So David's over in the director's chair.
Where are you at, David?
Hey guys, how are you? I'm right here.
What's going on? Young man.
Hey.
Hey Scott, how are you doing this morning?
I'm good. Had a good weekend.
Yeah.
Did some music. Usually my weekends involve a little live music playing, a little family time. We had a grill fest, so I got to play for about 360 folks, a couple of hours of music.
Where at?
And that was over at Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene. So they had the Representative Eli Crane was there, and he was sharing a bit of his personal story. And I think the cool thing about it is it wasn't super political. I mean, obviously, anybody that's in Congress has an agenda with talking points and things. But in this particular case, it was a men's event, and he was really connecting with some of the men on personal issues. And I thought what was cool is he was sharing some of his personal challenges and ways that his faith had evolved over time and some different things. And I thought, I was like, yeah, this is the kind of real authentic conversation that you want to hear from people that represent you.
So we need more of that, don't we?
Yeah,
just
I agree.
Real talk.
Well, that's what we're here for.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? We had a good weekend. David and I and our families went out and did a little family time together on Sunday after church. But we got
did I miss that text?
Yeah. Where were you?
Where was I?
Mod Pizza, 10:30. No, what, 11?
That's weird.
Put it down. Well, not next week, but the following week. Hey, you know, we got David and I in our group text, chat, Slack, hey, what if we talked about this? So let's just jump right into it. What, you mentioned money and some of the things that are going on. So I'm going to throw it back to you because it was your brainchild, but we're stoked to go this morning.
Sure. So what I thought was cool was a post that I read of yours over the weekend, because we troll each other all week long, and that's how we figure out like who's doing what and what's going on in their lives. And yeah.
And you should see the behind the scenes comments we make to each other on text, but it's all good.
Yeah. So it just got me thinking, because I thought it was funny, but also relevant. And I wanted to kind of read and paraphrase, because we did have some discussion over the weekend that, you know, it was a funny post that you put, but there was also so much truth and so much kind of sadness behind it. So So I wanted to read it. So for those of you that don't follow Clint Peake on Instagram or Facebook, he's a great follow. And so big baseball fan and big sports fan. But what you had mentioned was you said that there was an intro line by, I believe it was Jeff Passan, or they were going over to him, and it said, "Welcome back to SportsCenter, presented by ESPN Bet. We go to our FanDuel MLB insider, Jeff Passan, at our DraftKings studio in LA, brought to you by Caesars Sportsbook." Wow, that's a lot of betting advertisement. Yeah. Why do you think that is?
Money, 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 money.
Right.
Yeah. So obviously it kind of struck a chord with you, right? Because you heard that, and I'm sure you had to maybe even pause and rewind and be like, did that just happen?
Yeah.
That is a mouthful. So you had, essentially you have four different sponsors in that sentence, all of them sports betting or sports book related. Yeah. And it had to have felt just like a complete sellout of a line, and everybody's chasing advertisers, and we're in the business of media and advertisers, and we're driven, our revenues are driven by advertising and sponsoring, so we get it. But at the same time, what's going on with all of these advertisers with on ESPN. Why is it
only hypocrisy runs deep? Is all I can really say, because since the 20s, when the Black Sox era and doing the series and all that stuff, it's been in every clubhouse. We talk about it in every spring training. Everybody knows. You just don't associate with gamblers. Not you don't gamble. You don't associate with gamblers. That was kind of the whole thing. Shoeless Joe and all those guys permanently banned. And now, and I was that guy with Pete Rose. And I said to David, I think yesterday we were talking about this. I said, no one played the game harder than Pete Rose. Mm-hmm. I had the pleasure of being alive during his entire era. And no one, he didn't walk to first base. If you walked him, he ran. Mm-hmm. He sprinted to first base every time. It wasn't a show. That's the way he played. He was the guy that initiated diving into the base rather than sliding into the base. That was Pete Rose. Great ball player, longevity, holds a lot of records, and yet he broke the cardinal sin. And all along I said, great player, some room in the hall for him with an asterisk, but he broke the rule that everybody knew, even as a manager. And people go, well, Clint, he was managing, and I don't want to get into a deep dive about the repercussions of that, but again, like we're probably going to jump into a basketball story you told. You don't have to do anything necessarily nefarious to have it negatively impact your team. Let's say you're in a you use somebody today and you use him up because you've got money on your team, but you're sacrificing tomorrow only to win today, not because you want to win today per se, but because you've got money in that. That affects other games that maybe you aren't betting. And if I'm watching you as Pete Rose and I see you're betting today but you're not betting tomorrow, what is that telling me as a spectator or someone watching from behind the scenes? So I've been that guy. Pete does not belong in the Hall of Fame. However, over the last 3-4 years, every time you're watching a game, you got FanDuel's and you got Sports Kings and all these different, and they're sponsoring each pitch. Sometimes, like, hey, if Cano hits a single here, they're not pays. Yeah, and I'm like, well, wait a minute.
It's crazy. Well, it's the ease of which anyone and everyone can bet now, right? Because there's multiple different apps on your phone.
You don't have to leave your home. You can do it from bed.
Yeah, and so I think that's been the evolution of it. Is it used to be like you either had to find some bookie in a back alley that's willing to take some of your cash, or you had to work it amongst friends, or you had to go to a specific casino and only right there could you do it. And now you could do it anywhere and everywhere, and you could bet on anything. And so for me personally, I have what is known as an addictive personality. So what that means is I can get hooked on things that don't necessarily serve me. Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons I'm sober for the last 4.5
Amen.
Years. And thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that.
That's a decision you will never regret.
No, and I haven't yet. But because I know that about myself, I lean towards avoidance on other behaviors that can become addictive. So I'm not the best guy to talk to about how the sports gambling and betting and the whole system works, but I do know that it's an addiction, can be for a lot of people, and it can be devastating to families. And with it being so easy now, and on top of it with all of the sports outlets being sponsored by all of these different agencies, like, is it making our society better?
No.
Is it making the sports experience better?
No.
Why?
And think about this, just to kind of piggyback off on what you said. Sports, professional sports, especially baseball, they've been sponsored by beer.
Sure, yeah.
Beer.
That's a good
which
point.
Is another addiction, right? Potentially, mm-hmm. for a lot of people. They've been sponsored by, I mean, the Cardinals were owned by Anheuser-Busch Corporation for, I don't know, half a century, something like that.
The Milwaukee Brewers has the dude exactly. when he hits the home run and he goes, yahoo!
And I'm not making a comment pro or con. I'm just saying they've been sponsored by things that could help create less than desirable outcomes if you abuse what happens. The thing with the gambling is because it's not pure. That's kind of like why I always loved baseball, well, professional sports as a whole, because I thought the outcome was in doubt
right
at the beginning. And on any given Sunday, anybody can beat anybody. And, you know, a third of all your games, even the worst teams in baseball, even the Mets of 62, they did win 40 games.
Right.
They lost 120, but they still, my point was, I don't think it loses. It becomes professional wrestling if we, not to bang on professional wrestling fans, but we already know. There's no allure for me to watch professional wrestling because it's a cartoon.
Well,
is that fair enough to say? I mean, I hope you're not a wrestling fan and I'm hurting your feelings, but it's just the reality of it.
Who's all of our fans that are wrestling community aficionados are going to be upset? But yeah. My kids and I. We would watch wrestling because of how crazy and over the top it was.
Oh yeah,
because you know it's fake.
Yeah,
and it's like the over theatrics and everything. Like we would just lean into it and be like, oh, look at this dude, he's fired up, he's gonna take this other guy out. Oh, the ref wasn't looking. that's crazy. He's just not
wrestling's
looking.
Fake.
Uh oh,
pro wrestling.
Oh no.
College wrestling's not pro wrestling. Come on, David.
Come
with us.
It's
come to the bright.
I just realized that not everybody might have known that.
Yeah,
I do.
We're not even going to talk about the holidays.
You know, it's not. Maybe it's fine. It's probably.
You know, I will say this, and this is a good tangent, but I will say this about professional wrestlers: those dudes are in some shape. The moves that they make, you and I'd break our neck.
Oh, you're
first
still
off,
doing...
we wouldn't even be able to do it, but. The stuff, the moves they make now, that's pretty slick.
Yeah, there's a lot of athleticism.
There really is.
Right. So you can say, okay, the outcome is predetermined. Yeah. But there is a lot of skill and a lot of coordination and things that go into it.
And I get it. I
see
the entertainment.
It's not completely fake. You just may not know that the outcome is already predetermined.
Okay.
And they rode together in the van, and they're going to leave together in the van, but it's all good.
Yeah, but I guess... So as I was kind of thinking about it some more, and it makes sense to me. So there's an article out right now from University of South Carolina that had studied some of the effects of the increased ease in which people can gamble, and what some of the outcomes have been. And the biggest winners have been the sports industry and have been the networks like ESPN and those other networks, because what they're saying is it keeps people watching games longer because you're going to see a game all the way through to the end, and you're going to watch games that you normally wouldn't watch because you actually have a vested interest in it. So just that alone, it's obvious why ESPN is dropping.
Sure.
All of these sponsorships, because they want you gambling, because if you're gambling, you're watching their network longer. You're watching.
That's your reference point.
Yeah, you're watching games you normally wouldn't.
Yep.
And what I always thought was interesting about that is, let's take March Madness. Do I take my hard-earned income and I put it in the investing hands of 18 to 20-year-old kids who... have a lot of pressures on them, a lot of stakes. You don't know what they're going through mentally. You don't know what their travel schedule was like. You don't know what their influences are. And it's like saying that, okay, I got $50 in savings. Here, 18-year-old kid, I'm going to put it in you because I believe in you more than I believe in my own ability to invest. And so that always just seemed kind of crazy to me. Have you ever gotten into betting yourself and help walk me through that rationale.
I never really was a gambler, but as a younger guy, I did a little bit. And I also worked out of Henderson, Nevada.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's
gambling,
a little gambling.
Yeah,
that
a little gambling down there. And was there a lot and, you know, won a few bucks. And I remember one time I was there, I was married, and I lost, I don't know, $300 or $400, which... You know, 300 or 400, 30 years ago, was he? and made that. Told my wife before I got home. I figured I'd break the news while I was 400 miles away, and she gave me the incredible advice, well, go in there and get it back. And I'm like, well, I've already bought a couple of benches around here, and I think I'll just leave it as it is. Now, I never really, I've had some, I'm a kind of an addictive personality. I smoked for a long time and stuff like that. But thank God I don't do, you know, I'm nicotine free for decades now. But I never was a gambling, and gambling never really did it for me. But I was a day trader. So guess what, Scott? I'm a gambler. Yeah, I got it's a little more controlled. That, right? I can do a little more research on it. I'm not betting on 18-year-olds. But there was a lot of gambling aspects to that. And you mentioned if we're gambling, we're watching the sports networks more to follow. Because you could be in a blowout game and see it still might make money in the fourth quarter because of points or something crazy happens and who's going to score a touchdown and somebody gets a third. Because my son, we probably need to drag him. He's a gambler on parlays and the football, and they go out to casino. He doesn't do it nearly as much now, but, you know, I won $2,000. Of course, you know, in the process, he's lost $3,000 to win back his $2,000.
Right.
So
most people are very open about their winnings.
You never hear. Hey, they don't build those casinos anywhere on losers' money or winners' money. Trust me, that's losers' money. Right. But guess what I was doing when I was day trading? Getting up at 5:30 in the morning, making sure I had my shower, my coffee done, and the minute that an hour before trading, I've got the money channels on. I got two of them. I'm watching them. I'm studying, and I'm watching them right through every day till, you know, the market closes.
Right.
Every day.
Yeah. So
you know what? My personality changed. Even though I was making money, and actually making pretty good money at one point, my wife's like, "Yeah, this is not good." Because you know what? My day was all predicated on what the market did that day.
Yeah.
Yeah, hey. I had a good day. We made money.
Hey, do you guys want to gamble right now?
What's that?
What you got?
You want to gamble on what the temperature is going to be today for the weather?
62.
Ooh, 62.
I would rather our weather guy in the video director chair just give me what the weather is so that I don't have to gamble. Do you have that ability,
I'm a bad influence. I'm sorry.
Do you have that ability, good
yes,
sir?
Yes, I do.
Give us some weather.
All right, so the high today is going to be 64 degrees. There's a 20% chance of rain today. That's pretty crazy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, more rain. Cool,
those mountains in the east looked pretty dark a couple hours ago. Yeah. So
lows
I can see that.
Low's going to be 43 tomorrow, 69 degrees. And then Thursday kind of spices up a bit, hit 79, Friday 78.
Beautiful.
And then the weekend, more rain comes Sunday with a high of 59.
Those outdoor Easter sunrise services are going to be a little bit nippy.
Yeah, no, that's that's right.
Yeah.
Man.
And we'll circle back to both Thursday and Easter in a little bit.
Okay, so
thanks for bringing that
Clint,
up.
You didn't hit the pot, man. Sorry.
Okay.
All right.
Was it over or under? Because I was a little under. Shoot past.
You're a little under. Okay. But you got to hit it. You know.
You know, the whole thing I think that spurred a lot of this, and we haven't called him by name, and it's Shohei Ohtani.
Oh,
with
right.
The, with
right.
the sports gambling and. Gosh, I hope that what we're hearing is what happened, as bad as that is. But Scott,
come on!
But Scott, this thing didn't start this way. This information that started leaking out, and I can't call the gentleman by name, but he's the interpreter for Ohtani. Mm-hmm. Any picture you've ever seen of Ohtani in a uniform, he's next to him.
Right, and so a little backstory maybe for our viewers as to what is going on if they haven't fully followed what's going on with this guy and his interpreter, and sounds like some embezzlement or some sort of
Well, the first story was, and it was an ESPN that didn't make air, but it was an interview they did with this gentleman, and he said, and Ohtani's group had sent him to ESPN to clear it up.
Okay.
And he says, Ohtani loaned me money and paid my debts of up to like $4.5 million in gambling, which is a sizable amount.
That's
which right away, if that's true, if that story happens, bad news for Ohtani.
Yeah.
Because you can't be paying gambling debts for someone else directly out of your account.
Right.
And it's an unauthorized, because California, I didn't know this, but California is one of the states that doesn't sanction gambling outside of the casinos.
Okay.
Whereas I think there's, I did a little research. I think there's like still 18 states in America, which is crazy for me to say, because think about this. As a kid growing up, there was only one place you could gamble legally, Nevada.
Yeah.
And only in certain parts of Nevada.
Right. That, because I was even predating some casinos.
Right.
Right.
Right. Yeah. This actually went way, 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 way back. Even before Bugsy Siegel and all those guys showed up, built Las Vegas. So that was the first statement. That was the first thing. And then apparently somebody read the law in Otani's camp and got a couple lawyers involved. And they were like, whoa, freeze that. Stop. This didn't happen. And now they come back with, hey, there's theft. This is theft. Otani knew nothing about any of this. Mm-hmm. So we didn't get out of the gate with clarity. Well, that stinks for, especially if Otani's innocent.
Yeah, but then you're also saying, okay, where did the $4.5 million come from? They had an initial explanation, and then they're like, oh, he didn't know anything about it. And that's, I know that happens to you a lot, where you're like, what happened to $4.5 million?
Yeah,
it was,
I think it happened
must be in my
yesterday.
Other pockets.
Yeah. My other pants.
Yeah. So the story is kind of shifting a little bit, and he may have had some involvement. But, you know, so these are young kids with a lot of money, and there are a lot of people around them that are influencing them. There's a lot of temptation. And I think in this day and age, and one of the things that we try to do on some of our podcasts is be good influences on people, because you don't know. I can't imagine some of the pressures that this guy's under.
Can you? We can't.
With everything. And then, you know, people are really good at persuading as like, oh, it's not that bad. This happens all the time. It's part of what we
it's
do.
Part of our culture.
Here.
This is what we do.
Yeah, just this guy's in the soup for $4.5 million. Just hook him up and we'll move on from it. And you know, he's probably got 90,000 things to do besides practice, because you still have to be good at hitting a baseball, or you're not going to make anybody any money.
And that's kind of been his whole. I followed his career from. Or how could you not if you're a baseball fan?
Right.
This guy is. I said to Scott just before we got started, he is a generational talent. He is one of the best three or four best baseball players myself that I've ever seen. Probably the best baseball player I've ever seen. There's a lot of things he can't do, but one thing he can do is he can hit. Mm-hmm. And he can pitch.
I'm glad he's not pitching this year.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, can I throw a stat at you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So this is playtoday.co, gambling addiction statistics. An estimated 23 million Americans go into debt because of gambling. U.S. citizens spend around $500 billion on gambling every year.
Half a trillion.
And it's not even legal in a lot of states.
Yeah, well, apparently 18 of them or something like that. And yet, you know what? The states, for years, I always say they just kicked the mafia out. I'm not lobbying for the mafia to be back as it was, but they just kicked them out. Think about it: the bookies, the runners, then playing the numbers. What is the lottery? We're playing the numbers. I mean, that's what you're doing. You're picking numbers, and we're pooling it together, and we're giving apparently a lot of this money to education. Where's my faux pas sound there, David? But we're giving all this money to, we know better. Well, you know, it says in the Bible, we're going to go there eventually. I might as well get us right there. The love of money is the root of all evil. People get that wrong a lot. They leave out the love part of that. The money's the root of all evil.
Yeah,
not true,
that.
Not true. That's a bunch of garbage. But the love of money, according to the Bible, is the root of all evil. And I'm not going to disagree with the Bible about anything, but I'm certainly not going to disagree about the money part, because I believe that's to be true.
Yeah. Shout out to the Bible.
Yeah. You know, I read in preparation for this, I started digging, you know, Google is a wonderful tool. And I get next to love, according to Google, next to love, money is the most sang about topic that we sing about as far as songs go. So we sing about love or the loss of love or the want of love. And then we sing about
individual.
Yeah.
We got to get genre specific on that, though, because isn't country mostly about like their girlfriend and their dog?
And their dog and their mom and trains and stuff. But they talk about money, trust me.
Yeah.
But well, as a whole, there's the whole list. I mean, and I thought Money for Nothing, Dire Straits, great song. One of the very first songs that ever played on MTV when they played music on there. The OJs, Money, 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 Money. They repeat six layers. I looked the lyrics up. Money, Money, Money by the OJs. Uh-huh. Six times, times six. So the word money is used 36 times at the outset of the song and throughout the song. Money, 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 money.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, it's also when you're
no extra
about,
fee for the singing. Well,
that's, I think we might get a sync licensing issue there. But when you're creating art, you're obviously doing music is art, and you're trying to find a way to grab people and create stuff that resonates
that can
with
relate
them.
To and exactly.
So, and so that's pretty telling that when your driving forces are love. Love is a very strong emotion and something that all of us want in terms of good friendships and good partners and all of that. And then money being right up there, there's a love element to that, but it's like you can't. I've always had to challenge myself because I can't serve two masters.
Right.
And if you're making decisions that are based on this other master, like gambling or finances, right, or this conflated idea of what you should have versus what you do have, then you're willing to risk it more often and do unhealthy gambling, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Because do you not? I believe life is a gamble. Fair enough.
There's risk.
There's
in
a lot of risk if you're
do.
Living life kind of like, especially if you're living life to the fullest, you're gonna, or you're a thrill seeker, or you have, you know, there's a lot of risk involved. That's a gamble.
Right.
Fair enough. Mm-hmm. I've in my past life, especially with business and stuff, there's been times. Sometimes it worked out, and I won that bet. Mm-hmm. Other times it didn't work out and I lost that bet. But that was a little different than just what we're talking about is a totally different. Yeah. I'm handing you $50.
You know what I like about that, though, is in those situations, you're betting on yourself.
Exactly.
You're not putting your money in the hands of 18 exactly. to 20-year-old kids to do a performance that you have no control
yeah,
over.
Right.
You're putting it on yourself and you're saying, you know what? I'm going to bet on myself. I have this idea. I think it's going to work. Yep. And with that vested interest, you are more apt to see it through or to work harder or to do what you need to make
that's
sure
beautiful.
That that's successful.
That's 100%. I agree with that. And you know what? I won't say who it was, but I was talking to a guy just this morning and it wasn't going well. And I'm like, what'd you learn? Well, I learned that I can count on me. And I'm like, that's it. That actually, if that's all you learn from this scenario,
is you gotta,
that's valuable. Because you know what? Bet on yourself again. Keep betting on yourself,
yes.
People. Keep betting on yourself.
Yeah, I think that's the difference. And one of the takeaways is we want to build a parallel culture with society through some of our independent media that talks about betting on yourself. And I think we can get more into that after a word from our sponsors.
Discover the power of 88 Crime, where your anonymous tips are rewarded with cash. When you call in anonymously with a tip, you are given a code. With the code and a password, you can walk into a bank and redeem your reward anonymously. If your anonymous tip results in a felony arrest, you can claim up to $2,500 cash reward. Let's stop the silence on crime and strive for a safer community. For more information, please visit 88crime.org or call 88crime.
Copper Creek Cookies, Copper Creek Cookies, coppercreekcookies.net.
We can print anything on our soft vanilla logo cookies. We deliver them and other sweet treats locally. We are located at 4249 West Ina Road, Suite 121. Call us 520-300-1131. We bake smiles.
Copper Creek Cookies, Copper Creek Cookies, CopperCreekCookies.net.
Are you looking to establish a powerful online presence for your brand? Look no further than Live the Dream Media. Our team of experts possess the capabilities and skills necessary to make it happen. From creating compelling content to analyzing data and making strategic decisions, we've got it covered. Don't let a lack of social media know-how hold you back. Visit ltdmedia.net for more information.
Woo-hoo! And we are back.
You came in hot, man.
We are back. Commercials you just saw, those are some of our favorite people. No, let me rephrase that. They are our favorite people.
Oh, look who's back.
Scott went and ran around. Yeah, you made it. He ran around the block. I bet him that he couldn't make it back in time, and he did. So here's your dollar.
You know what's going to be great is once we have more sponsors, I will have more time.
Can we extend the pee break, please?
Yeah. Hey, have you ever seen the movie Trading Places? It just hit me when I made that. Trading Places with Eddie Murphy, yes. and Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah, that was a good one.
And remember the bet that the two brothers had? I can't think of their names. Do me a favor, David. Look up Trading Places, Mortimer, and
so were these sub characters, or these were
those
characters?
Were the two dudes?
Okay.
That were the brothers, and they owned everything.
Oh, Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy. Oh yeah. Man, that's one of the best.
Yeah,
movies
that's
ever.
A great movie.
Oh, that's great perspective.
It's hilarious, and the brothers are gambling. You remember that? And they're gambling over whether they can take Eddie Murphy, who is a street dude, and put him in Dan Aykroyd's place, who is a sophisticated member of the club, and he's, you know, got the jacket, and they're all investors, and they're on Wall Street, if you set the story up. And the brothers make a bet. We never know what that bet is, that they can make it happen. And Mortimer is betting that they can make this happen with Eddie and the bet, and they see it play out in the bathroom. They're in there. You won the bet, Mortimer, and it's a $1. They ruined this man's life for $1.
For a buck.
Yeah. I won't tell you how. Check that movie out. There's a great twist to the end there, but the gamble was over a dollar.
Well, and so as we kind of frame as some of that we were talking about before the break and the run around the block, was being able to bet on yourself. And I think that's a culture that we're trying to perpetuate, because you have these parallel societies, and in these ones, whether it's gambling or any other type of addiction, you're choosing to give away your power to do that behavior, let's say. And so, like, I was pulling up some of the things because I wanted to understand, like, is gambling similar to any other addiction where, like, a little bit is okay and too much is too much? And I was looking it up on the Mayo Clinic, and really all the same addictive behaviors for gambling of when you realize you might have a problem is the same as
any other
addiction. Yeah. It's being restless or irritable when cutting back. And you even kind of mentioned, yeah, once that day trading was more consuming of your life, like if you weren't paying attention to the stocks that morning, or you didn't have a great day, like that affected you emotionally, it sounds like, I'm sure, from being able to go up or down. And also the way that it affects relationships, and, you know, whether you're out having to borrow money or you're so consumed into something that you can't be there for your kids, or you can't be there for your partner, and the different relationships, that's when you know you have a developing problem, whether it's alcohol or it's any of the other. And so all the addiction signs seem to be pretty much the same. You just substitute a different vice.
Well, check this out. Summertime, 6 to 1, all those things you just described, I'm out. 6 to 1, Monday through Friday. Mm,
mm-hmm. Okay.
Wintertime, we change the time. We don't change the time in Arizona. 7 to 2. I'm out.
Yeah, and you're
Can't
just...
you see Dad's making money? Can't you see I'm working? I never really ever pulled that card, but that's in my head.
That's that.
I can't let go of the wheel. That restlessness. And then if you had something that didn't work out, you know, the rest of the day, you're kind of, you know, especially because it involves maybe 1,000 or 2 or 10, whatever. I mean, I gambled with only my own money, by the way, and gambling. If you just joined, I'm talking about day trading, not at the slot machines. Hey, David, I love it. He popped a shirt up there, or I stretched out.
Oh yeah,
the best day ever. I'm gonna throw that in there real quick. OVC and Oral Valley Church of the Nazarene this Sunday, Easter Sunday. Sunrise outside, dress warm, 6:30.
Bring an umbrella.
Yeah, bring an umbrella. 6:30. I went last year. It was that's the first time I'd done an outdoor.
I'm just kidding. That was in the next weekend. This weekend's going to be hot.
in quite a while. It was a great experience. But 6:30, the outside, 8, 9:30, 11, and also at Saddlebrook Ranch, you'll have to help me with that. Is that at 9 or 9:30?
That one takes place at 9.
9.
Yeah.
So there's 5 opportunities to do Easter at OVCN. And also then Saturday, it'll be a zoo up there, literally. They'll have 6,000 people.
Oh, yeah, the extravaganza.
Yeah, the extravaganza. So shout out to all the great people up at Oral Valley Church of the Nazarene on the spectacular that they'll be presenting on Easter Sunday.
Right, right. If you don't have a church home or you haven't been to church in a while, I know that for me, as somebody that didn't grow up in church, like that's been a great environment for me. That people are welcoming, they have great attitudes, they, you know, you get to learn how to cultivate a relationship with Jesus and how to understand the Bible and different interpretations of it. And it's not like this hardcore black and white thing that I was always worried about. I'm not a dude for cults. And so this is not a cult, and that I think is really helpful. So I'll be playing on the worship arts team for the Good Friday service.
I was getting ready to say, what's the time frame on that? I can't remember.
I want to say 6 o'clock is when it starts.
If you're interested, you can reach out to Oral Valley Church of the Nazarene or any of their digital platforms, Facebook page, website.
Yeah, and it's
all that time's there.
It's a popular service, but it's a different service because it's centered around the crucifixion, and so our music is a little more somber or reflective on that time, but it's also a very powerful service. So for those of you, I was actually talking to, I got the same hairstylist, Amy Weber, over down at Tucson Barber, so shout out to them. And
let me guess.
My hair looks so good today. Amy gets it done.
Is it CC has his hair cut there as well?
I think he uses a private private like back alley guy or something.
I'm glad not everybody can name. Get to so it. The other one's CH, is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're talking in pseudonyms here.
Amy and I were talking and just talking about with Easter coming up and all of what it means and some, you know, it's beyond color and Easter eggs and doing all of the kids stuff, which is nice traditions, but come check out a Friday evening service for Good Friday. And it's different and it's heavier, but at the same time, it's also bringing hope and a deeper understanding of why we believe some of the things that we do. So it's definitely worth going to. It's packed. So I would
especially this Sunday. I told and they also offer, a Wednesday service at 6:30. So keep that in. And then you can see it all online. If you can't get there, you can watch all of this online.
Yeah, very true.
I have the pleasure of pushing buttons once in a while upstairs, and I am going to be Sunday. But I was telling someone the other day that actually it was my mother. She was talking to someone in her neighborhood, and they're atheists, and you know, okay. and she's invited him to church. And they're buddies. I mean, they're like tight. They were going back to Canada for the summer, and mm-hmm. they said, we saved just enough room in the car for you to go with us, Joyce. And she's like, yeah, I come with a lot of baggage and people, so that's not going to work. But I said, you know, when they come back, ask them if they like people, if they like fun, if they like to be around, if they want to be a part of a community. Because I know someone real well that went with us one time, not a churchgoer, but when we left, I said, just what'd you think? You know, wow, that's a great community. And if I could use one word other than something from the spiritual realm to describe Oral Valley Church of the Nazarene, I would say an awesome, what, that's two words, an awesome community of people.
Right, exactly.
They really are. There's a lot of. We talked about it. There's a lot of energy, good energy, when you walk in that in that sanctuary.
And you're not just saying that because now you're on the board, are you?
Yeah, there's a lot of plugs going on here now. All of a sudden,
we need to
go back and check. I've always plugged these guys.
But hey, yeah. Since we're doing plugs, I got a couple other events that are pretty cool coming up.
Give it to us.
All right, so the first one is. It's a veteran Paul Marsh recognition event
coming up
on Saturday, this Saturday at 10 a.m. at the Arizona Veterans Memorial Cemetery at Marana.
Please show up and thank this gentleman who is in the final stages of his life.
Yeah, he's a 93-year-old Korean War veteran. Paul Marsh is entering in his final days. One of his last great achievements was willing into existence the Arizona Veterans Memorial Cemetery at Marana. Yeah. The Kai family donated that land. That's a pretty cool thing that they did recently here, and they're asking folks to show up by 9:45 a.m. and give Paul Heroes welcome. That's what they're looking to do. The other event we have is coming up April 8th. It's gonna be a live broadcast from our studio
here
with the Marana Food Bank.
Yes.
Sponsored by Dove Mountain Epoxy Floors. Yes. Okay. Some cool stuff. So what's going to be happening is they're going to be looking for donators, and they're going to be sharing some stuff about the new food bank in Marana. That's the key thing, right? It's a new one. And, you know, somebody here in this podcast right now is very humble about their role with the food bank, and that's Clint Peak.
Oh. You guys stop it.
So if people don't know this, he's probably going to come after me after this, but Clint Peak is actually on the board of the new Marana Food Bank and has been working diligently with the other board members to make this thing happen, along with, you know, some people involved in the town, Ed Honey and some others. And, you know, we got to applaud you, Clint, because you're doing a lot of other things in the community too, but that's a big one, right? Feeding the ones that need
it's
food.
It's important.
It's a really important thing.
But so you know what?
If you could tune in, that'd be awesome.
Carlos and Lucia and Sophia and Veronica. That's the folks that are really, really getting the work done. You know, I get to stand behind them and applaud every now and then and maybe chime in, but there's some people. And then the countless volunteers. We've got 40 volunteers right now that show up every week to do the job. And I haven't seen current numbers, but in the first 90 days, we had fed like 15,000 people. And just so you understand our motivation. Yeah, thank you very much. The motivation, and it has been this way for a long time. We've talked about this for years. My wife, Patty Cumberford, I got to give her a big shout out. She was right there on the front lines when this was all happening. Ed Honey, the mayor of Marana, was on the front lines. Terry Rosema, a lot of other people, and I'm going to forget. I'm going to be John Officer. I don't want to leave anybody out. But our whole focus is we want to feed you. We don't want people hungry, right? But we want to lift you up. We want to get you to a place where you can help us feed the next one in line. Because they're going to be next. You know, if you don't take much history to study that we've had hungry people forever, people in need forever.
Right.
My guess is we're always going to have people in need and hungry people forever. That's kind of my guess. Based on 4,000 years, we haven't broke that cycle yet. So I hear people say, we want to stomp out hunger and all this. I'm like, that's a noble goal, but that's actually, you're not going to ever, you can't reach that. You know why?
Why?
Money. It's not that we don't have enough food.
Mm-hmm.
Is that fair enough to say? We can produce food. Matter of fact, we produce food in factories now.
Yeah, exactly. There's not a lack of ability to grow crops, produce food, produce sustainable, like, you know, the Feed My Starving Children event that we're all a part of here.
What was it, 1.5 million? Isn't that what we did?
1.5 million meals.
I take credit. I did not show up this year. So you guys did a great job.
But you were you sponsored it, and you're so involved in these types of things, and that's why you're so passionate about the Marana Food Bank too, is it's taking care of people. It's using your time to serve a purpose. And
Purpose bigger than you.
Exactly.
Hey, gentlemen, yes. If I could chime in. So yeah. I did leave some deets out on that event for the Food Bank Clint.
Okay.
The key thing for listeners and viewers is that it is a live event on Facebook only. And you have to tune in on Facebook to see that.
And that's April 8th, correct?
That is April 8th, yeah. April 8th.
What time?
We got it listed here. You think I would know, right?
Yeah.
My computer's...
I think it's 8 o'clock. I think it's 8 to 9:30, but I could be wrong. Tune in at 8 and just hang
it's
tight.
It's at 10 a.m. to 11:30.
Okay, 10 to 11:30. Like I said, 10 to 11:30.
That's what happens when your calendar looks like a Christmas tree. So,
show it to them, David. They would not believe it.
I don't want
to
give people
I showed
anxiety,
it the other day, and I went to somebody, whoa. You got a day off there, Clint. I'm like, yeah, that's the first one in like 4 months. Hey, yesterday or Sunday when we left church at 10:30, we went and had lunch with David and his lovely family. And we got home at 12, and I had nothing on my schedule from 12 till the following morning, yesterday morning at 8 o'clock.
How about
vacation,
that?
Vacation, buddy!
Feel? How did that
come
feel?
On?
Well, so kind of getting back to the thought I was trying to put together on greater purpose and doing something for other people that's worth doing. And I know for me, from that perspective of service, you know, I was called to service in fire and emergency
and
services 20, for that.
3 years, 20, how long?
24 officially. Years. Yeah. I did some hard time in South T. To start, South Tucson was a...
Oh, boy, I didn't know
you
that.
You get extra credit.
Yeah, that's what all these scars are.
A little extra credit. Two for one.
No, but, that I think is the missing ingredient sometimes for people, that you can fall into addictions and some of these other things because it's like, well, why wouldn't I? Or what else am I going to do with my time? What else am I going to do with my money? And sometimes you can get very insular and personal and say, well, if it doesn't matter, then why not? But if you have some of these organizations that you're involved in or this greater purpose or this desire to serve, it gives you that why.
Mm-hmm.
It's to say, well, this is why I don't chuck all of my cash into gambling, because I'd rather invest my cash in humans that cannot eat, as an example. So the Marana Food Bank then serves as a good example. Would you want to put your $50 in the hands of your 18-year-old basketball players, or you want to put it into somebody's mouth?
Yeah.
Basketball players. Well, I'm sorry, Scott. What were you going to say there? I wanted to just jump in.
Please.
Basketball. You're trying to get the right answer because I was asking a question. You're like, basketball.
Oh, sorry. No. Continue. My bad.
You know, I mentioned a while ago the reason why we can't feed everybody, and we could. If that was really the goal of society as a whole, to feed everybody, it would happen. Everybody would be fed today.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm telling you, it's money. I'm not going to get in specifics. But it's money. It's always money. And I know more than what I should on a lot of stuff. And it's like, that's just crazy. And you're like, well, but it's money. People approach life, well, what's in this for me? And to a degree, there's nothing really wrong with that in itself. But if that's your driving force, just stay away from me.
Hey, gents.
Right?
Hey, gents.
Yeah.
Clint, you sent me an article the other day. What was it, yesterday? 2 days ago. And it was about Blazer, and it was talking about the NIL deals in basketball. That's where I was going with it, where I randomly yelled basketball out.
Yeah.
Basketball!
Basketball! Basketball Jones!
But Yeah, we're talking about money, right? And we tie it into, we're talking about March Madness right here, and we're talking about gambling. And that article highlighted how every coach that was contacted by Blazer in regards to
accepting basically a bribe.
Yeah, bribes. Well, he was working for the FBI.
NCAA head coaches.
Yeah, yep. 100% of them took the bribe.
Yep.
And one of them was a coach in Arizona.
Yeah,
I can't think of his name.
That was a dark period for Arizona hoops. And I believe the ASU had rebranded us as a payers program instead of a players program.
Do you blame them?
They weren't wrong.
Like, touche.
You know, the crazy thing, too, about that article, too, is that how it's describing that the imminent collapse of NCAA sports with the money coming into it the way it is.
I think it's a done deal. Unless we chart a new course like now.
Yeah.
Well, imagine how challenging recruiting and retention is now. Because now it's centered around what's my NIL deal
exactly
going to be and what are going to be my perks and benefits.
Right.
But you have you take a football team that's got 50 kids on it. Well, you're not going to pay 50 kids $1 million that are backups and playing different roles. So then within the team, you have all of this disparity on who's getting the bigger NIL deals and who's not getting anything, who's getting their room and board paid for. And so that's got to create angst amongst the team.
Well, you got a quarterback that's making 10, and you got the linemen that are making 10, but it's
$10.
Minus a zero. So who's protecting who? Right? This is a situation. Okay, so Money Boy.
So, yeah, this article was by Guy Lawson, a Rolling Stone contributor to Yahoo News. His ending part of this article says, "The desperate resort to an unregulated NIL program won't fix a broken system. No amount of March Madness can change that reality."
It's a mess.
Well, I can't imagine being a coach and having to consistently chase donors and encourage my kids to stick around because we're developing a culture and we're doing this and that. And he's like, yeah, but Michigan's going to give me $1 million to block next year. And I've only gotten 10,000 here. So bye.
Yeah.
And it's like this level of amateurism is what everybody's banking on. Right? Like this isn't professional individuals. There's still a lot of work and time and effort that has to go into this. And these kids, I'm going to say it, they're kids. I played college ball. I remember how it was. And it's like, you're giving them insane amounts of money. And how do you psychologically, there's a problem, right? The advancement of you as an athlete, your attitude, your character, your ability to get better, to get stronger is definitely going to be skewed by that because you're going to have these urge and temptations to do things with this money. Am I correct? Like we're talking about gambling and all this other stuff, but think about what the other possibilities are. I mean, it's just, that was an eye-opening article you sent me, man.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. Comment. Yeah. That was, it starts even, I've been a part of the sports culture forever. I was thinking this morning, I used to play as a kid, probably 150 games a year. In my backyard with, you can't hit it to right or you can't hit, you're playing with 5-on-5 4-on-5 and you're going to be. And so these were not organized when I say 150, but we would go play a game organized and then we'd go play a triple hitter. You know, I had a baseball field in my backyard. I don't know if I ever told you that or not. My parents built my brother and
nice.
I our own.
You had a field of dreams.
We did. Literally.
How cool is
backstop,
that?
Backstop, base pass, pitching mound, short left field porch. I'm a right-handed hitter. As a young guy, it taught me a lot of really bad tendencies that I had to break. Use the other side of the field, Clint. You're really not going
to. Did you have the Fenway wall?
Well, we
had
sort of a Fenway wall. Don Edmondson's cornfield right behind that. So we lost a lot of baseballs over there. But this starts, and Chris. What's that dude's name in there? David saw this.
He's close.
Kind of saw this the other day. And I'm not bashing what we saw, but this starts at a really young age anymore We've got 7-year-olds that are flying across the country, literally. And sometimes if dad's a doctor or runs a brokerage firm or something, we're flying 6, 7, 8, 10-year-olds across the United States to play in baseball tournaments, basketball tournaments, sports tournaments, soccer. Mm-hmm. I'm a big proponent of this. I love it. I think it's a great thing. But it's like ludicrous at some point that we're spending this much time and effort and energy. It's not about fun anymore. It's about winning. It's about developing kids. And you mentioned a while ago, David, about the college guys and getting paid. Again, these are pretty good athletes. If you're playing collegiate football or baseball at any level, you're pretty good. But again, the percentage of those kids that go on to become men in a professional world or women in a professional world. Actually, women, really, what professional world do you go into, really?
Right.
Hey, I got a caller.
Beautiful.
Chris Holmberg, he's on the line. Hey, Chris, you there?
I am. How are you guys doing?
Man,
congratulations.
Good morning. Thank you. Good morning, Chris. I was calling your name out a while ago, not knowing you were calling in. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Clint. How are you?
I'm awesome. Hey, Chris, tell people what you do. Let's just jump in here. I know what you do, but share with our audience what you're up to and what all the good stuff you're doing over there at ESA.
Well, we have dove in heart and soul into education and all of the wonderful changes that and opportunities that we have in Arizona. So my wife is a former public school teacher for about 10 years. And then one of our business partners who we met through church, she's been an ESA special needs vendor since 2015 when it went universal and was open to all students in Arizona back in June of 22. We saw an opportunity or actually a huge need for a system and a process where parents could input what their learner needs and get connected to a short list of service providers, educational service providers that could do that. So we rolled out ESAConnection.com in October, and we also host trade fairs. We're going to be down there in Tucson on April 20th at Quest for Education and the Arts. And like I said, we're just getting the word out about what we do. But, you know, I also kind of want to talk about you guys, because I think what you guys are doing, getting the word out about education and is just huge. So I just love what you're doing. I want to support you and, you know, thank you guys, Chris, for what you do.
Hey, education is like top. I can't think of anything more important other than a walk with Christ. Education is like, I say it all the time, it's selfish on my part. I want young people trained and educated. Because the older I get, the more dependent I'm going to be on the system. I want great, whatever your role is, I want you to be great at it. And the only way to do that is through education, Chris. So we applaud you for everything that you're doing. And tell us a little bit about what ESA actually does, what the service that you actually offer. It's a great service, by the way, folks. I'm a spoiler. It's an awesome service.
So parents can get online, and it's very complicated right now. In fact, there's a term called complex spender, which you as a parent, there's so much flexibility in the state's ESA program that your student gets a scholarship. And if you don't have special needs, it's around $7,000. It can vary a little bit, plus or minus. It's paid out quarterly, but you can take that money and use it for your learner's education. You can do micro schools. You can do online math. You can hire a science teacher. There's two companies in the East Valley up here in Phoenix area. Your student can actually take aviation, learn how to fly, but they can learn about aerodynamics by actually getting their hands on an airplane or a glider. They can get in a simulator. We have one customer who does blacksmithing. So there's so many options out there, and with the innovation that's happening today, we're just scratching the surface. So basically what an ESA will enable you to do is customize your education for your learner. And you know, the public school system in a lot of instances, in a lot of places, they do fine, but most kids kind of have the way they want to learn. And so the ESA program was set up to enable that to happen. And parents can direct those funds that, the funds truly do follow the student. And all we do at ESA Connection is try to provide a more convenient process that a parent can use to find all those different teachers and opportunities for their learner, but also do it confidently. So you can rate and review different service providers, different resources. You can input different resources. Parents as well as vendors can input news and events that has to do with education. A lot of our vendors are experts at what they do, so they blog. So we're trying to find, and we have a community forum that's broken down into sub forums. So like by different grade levels, by homeschool, by private charter school. So parents can actually find and research topics, or they can start discussions. And, so all of these things are there for parents. And what we're doing for vendors is we're enabling them to very easily and affordably connect with parents, because many of these teachers, they are teachers. They've retired from teaching after so many years. They don't know a lot about business. So we actually have a 7-step process that in less than 2 hours, and with $85 that they pay to the state for their LLC, they can get their LLC, tax ID, a website, and be part of a database where parents can find their services, and then also engage with not only parents but other vendors, you know, that can help them along the way to learn how to develop and grow their business. So, you know, it's truly an online educational community, and it hasn't and really kind of doesn't exist. We just rolled this thing out in October. We have about 650 or so members on it now, and you know, we're growing every day.
That's about the time we met you, isn't it, Chris? Roughly?
Yes, sir. Yes.
October, November?
I think I was down there.
Yeah. Yep. What, when?
Yep. I think it was November.
Okay. I didn't realize it was that fresh. So a couple of quick questions on what you just said. So you would help a vendor. Is that what you said? You were like at least steer them through the process. Would you say 7 steps through the process to become a vendor for US or ESA?
Well, even more basic than that, to set up their teaching business. Like, okay. You know, if you've taught, I know when I retired from my corporate gig, I was like, okay, I want to do my own business. You know, first thing I got to go get, you have to have a website, you know, you have to set up an LLC, you got to get your tax ID number. So there's all of those basic things that teachers need to do to set their business up. And instead of taking weeks or months and not being real confident in it, or going out and paying a whole lot of money,
right?
We thought, well, why not just, I just went through it. Why not just write the steps down and share them with everybody?
Actually, we're going to help a guy get incorporated tomorrow. Clark Brady Kirby, you got a question.
Oh, nice. You know, what I like about this is you're helping give a platform for educators that are either moving on into retirement, or they're trying to find a way to still impart their wisdom, but they don't have that business background. And I think by being able to help guide them through that, you can actually get those subject matter experts, whether it's flight or blacksmithing or some of those things that you talked about, that can actually get to the kids, because we know that public schools or the different educational curriculum is very, 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 they know what they are and they know what they want to be. And that might not be what your kid is interested in, or that might not be the way that they learn. And you're helping facilitate this whole other world.
We really are. And, you know, not only are the teachers that have been there 20 years, you know, they're you know, either tired or, you know, they still have a heart to teach. In my wife's case, her mother was elderly and ill, and she had to quit teaching to care for her at home, but she still had time and she still wanted to teach. So, you know, setting up her own teaching business was, you know, made a lot of sense. And actually our other partner, Tammy, who'd been doing it for a while, she has shown a lot of people how to set it up. So, you know, in essence, what we did was we took everything out of Tammy's head and put it on a website to help others.
Just streamline
it. Be able to do it at scale. Yeah.
Hey, just a reference, you probably don't know this, but you mentioned flight and aerospace and stuff. Scott is the CEO of White Eagle Aerospace here in Tucson area. I don't know if you knew that or not, but this guy's an aerospace engineer, or owns a company that does that.
But really, the platform is very similar to yours, Chris. I mean, basically, the idea for me trying to help my father-in-law continue this business was there are a lot of aerospace engineers that have so much wisdom that they need to share with the Navy, with up and coming aerospace engineers, like all of those things, but they don't know how to run a business, and they don't want to take the time to set up websites and do all those different things. They just want to teach. And so we are definitely of the similar philosophy to say, hey, if I can take care of this aspect for you, and all you got to do is focus on delivering the stuff in which you're a subject matter expert, then it's a win-win for both. And so it sounds very similar to what you got going
100%.
On. 100%. That's awesome.
Yeah, 100%. And I don't know, I think it was Clint there that was making an observation about, you know, teachers. And, you know, one of the things I love is that now there are many people that have a heart to teach and the background to teach, but they don't have teaching credentials. And I think Arizona was extremely wise in the way they set up their system. Cause you know, the thought is, well, if, you know, we're supposed to be, you know, provide a high school diploma, and that's supposed to be all anybody needs to get along in life. You don't necessarily need college, then that should be all you need to teach. And there's a lot of folks on the other side of that are like, yeah, but you don't have credentials. But you know, we have one guy, Kyle Davis with KD Service. He teaches basic auto mechanics and servicing to kids, which if you think about it, that's a lost skill. There's not a lot of dads out there these days that are confident to do that, you know, but he doesn't need a teaching degree to do that.
Right.
But he has a heart to teach, you know, so does David
right.
with Black Iron Forge. You know, and I'll tell you, like Black, and he'll teach you in a couple of weeks how to take a railroad spike and make something out of it. But you know, when you get into the finer art of Damascus knife making, the chemistry, the critical thinking, the math that's involved in that is unbelievable. And, you know, a lot of these kids, they learn about what they're interested in, right? Mm-hmm. They want to own their education. And when they find something that they can go high, wide, and deep into, you know, it's an amazing thing happens because they develop a lot of cognitive skills that they may not have otherwise developed. And we have a customer, Brian Curtis, who has fossil crates, and he's a renowned paleontologist. And he was on and did a webinar with us, and he has a partner who is a psychiatrist. But their program, when kids have, at a very young age, most kids are interested in dinosaurs. But you look at the Latin, you look at the words and how long they are, but those kids are fearless at their vocabulary and spelling, and they make all those connections when they're early.
Mm-hmm.
So even if they don't stay with it in their teenagers, they kind of lose interest in dinosaurs. The cognitive skills that they developed by going deep into a paleontology program is phenomenal. And these opportunities are now available to us today.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And you're breaking those barriers, because there are people that I'm sure you guys would agree that to be a good educator isn't just being a master of your craft, but it's actually being able to communicate and articulate that. And
preach.
And some people have it and some people don't. And if you're limiting to, like, if you have somebody that has it, you've got a great mechanic, and you're saying, well, sorry, dude, in order to be able to teach people, you've got to have a master's degree in order to be affiliated with our college. Yeah. And then they take these years and years to kind of chip away at getting that master's degree just so they can impart their wisdom. That it's a stupid system. Yeah. So I appreciate and applaud what you guys are doing over there.
Hey, being a person that was born in the late 50s, real quick, Chris, let me jump in here. When we grew up in the 60s and 70s, that's when primarily when I'm in school, it was pretty much one size fits all.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's 50, how many right now, Chris? 55 million kids in America going to school? K through 12?
At least that, yeah.
Yeah, maybe more than that.
Probably at least that.
You're going to tell me that one size fits all for 55 million people?
Welcome to the box, Clint.
Come on. There's a box?
Put yourself in the box.
Come on. I love what you guys are doing. It's incredible. It's incredible the boldness of the state of Arizona and Governor Ducey at the time and the legislature for making this happen. This, correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, we had this in place in about 18 or 19 and
11. It actually
was it
started
back to
11? 2011. Yeah, wow. With special needs parents. Because,
and it know, was, the, but was it like a tiny, tiny, tiny percent, right?
Yes.
Like half of 1% or something like that.
Yep.
And where are we at
so
now?
So there were 12. Yeah, so there were 12,000 students in the program in June of 2022 when Governor Ducey made it universal. Now there's over 75,000.
See,
wow.
So we have 1,000,001 students in the state. So you're approaching 10%.
So we went from half of 1% to almost 10 in two years.
And they're taking shots. I mean, our legislatures are they're not getting love from the press and the governor and you know there's people on the other side of it that they'll say that it's costing too much money, which
false.
I don't understand because it costs half.
False. Yeah, we posted an article with the actual
there's no
numbers.
Accountability.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. From probably Matt.
Hey, I'd like to see these folks do their math on this because I think we're saving, correct me if I'm wrong, public schools about 14 grand, ESA is about 7 grand, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
General,
where's our, I mean,
yeah,
how are we losing money?
But what fits nice on a bumper sticker, right? Yeah. And a point you can make in the media is that we're bankrupting our school. You know, forget the numbers. It's very complex. But in general, yeah, just do the math. I mean, it's not rocket science.
Hey, remember those bumper stickers are being shared by people that have a public school education. So we can't expect too much out of them. So, Chris,
I was going to make a point.
Yeah.
But so on the micro school front, which is a new term and, you know, been around 5 or 6 years. But one of the points I was going to make is, you know, you were talking about teaching and certifications. You know, you pull that really talented person with a heart to teach and you put them into a traditional teaching education. That may not be the best for today's innovations, because for a micro school, for example, you know, it's not about teaching kids in a factory type setting.
Right.
It's that kid owns their education and the teacher is not sitting up there, you know, force feeding them information. The teacher is a guide and a coach, and they find out, the really talented ones find out what that learner wants to do and how they want to do it. And they just facilitate that. And it's a very one-on-one. It's a very boutique. You know, most people can only handle 8 to 10 kids. You know, some can do 12.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But if you have a teaching certificate, that may actually hurt you in that environment, unless you're the kind of person that can shift gears into that more coaching state of teaching.
Chris, let me ask you a question about that specifically. What age or what grade? I mean, and again, it's not going to be 100%, but like by second, third grade, if we see an aptitude of a kid that's got like a real skill at whatever it is, pick your subject, shouldn't we be leaning in pretty hard? Like right then? I mean, I know they're seven or eight years old, but is that kind of where this micro school that we're discussing, is that kind of how you're approaching it, or are we waiting a little longer?
No, I think every kid's different, right? We've been talking about that, and I'm probably not qualified to, you know, with the background that I need to really say something authoritatively on that. But I think in general, once you find a learner that is, you know, everybody in life has a switch, and some people go through the entire life and that switch never gets turned on. You know, but when you have a switch that gets turned on, when that happens,
you
can be there at the right time in the right place with what that learner wants and fuel that. There's no telling what they can do.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's just sort of common sense. Yeah. But Clint, I think you can make that statement. Yes.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Chris, you got an event coming up. We're running out of time here, but I want you to highlight that event coming up on April 20th. Can you do that for us?
Yeah. So April 20th from 10 to 2. We will be at Quest for Education in the Arts. They're up off Ina Road in Oracle in that area. Very, very innovative private school philosophy. I'll probably butcher this and Jennifer will get mad at me. But great concept. They have a lot of micro schools that meet there, enrichments, science, STEM, music, arts. So I think they have 450 students in that school now.
Oh, that's awesome.
She said, hey, we want to host. Like, you know, there's you know, we don't charge a whole lot. We just sort of want to get the vendors to come out of the woodwork in Tucson and start developing that vendor network and that family of educational service providers. So they all know each other. They all work. They all can refer to each other. But then we're open for free for parents. And we'll have a bounce house. There'll be kids' activities for free. Most of the booths will have drawings and things going on. We just want kids to, you know, one of the things that's frustrating is we get a lot of folks, well, it's Saturday. We have soccer. Little Johnny's got soccer. Well, maybe it might be worth letting Johnny go play soccer and you come and talk to some of these teachers and find out what is going on in education, because it has changed exponentially in the last couple of years. And if you really want the best for your learner, spend 2 hours, come out and see us. Mm-hmm. We'll have all kinds of teachers, all kinds of enrichments. And it's fascinating. And it's there. We're going to do it in Tucson, April 20th, which is a Saturday, from 10 to 2.
Beautiful.
Thank you. All right, Chris.
And one more quick thing. Yeah, you got websites or any way that we can get a hold of you, Chris?
Yeah, so ESAconnection.com is our website. There's a lot there. What I highly recommend is go on there. There's about a 9.5-minute virtual tour video on the homepage. So click on Learn More, watch that video, and see all the different ways you as parents, and if you're an educational service provider or you have a heart to teach, see how you can connect into this movement.
Beautiful.
Chris, thank you so much for calling in today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, we appreciate it. See you soon, Chris.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Get you back in studio soon.
Bye.
Yeah, right there. Feeding the hungry, lifting them up, educating the kids.
Well, what better use of your time? Again, if you're as we get older, and I found this as I hit 40, was like my mentality has to shift now to setting up the next generation for success. And I think people get so absorbed in their own stuff or their own pain or their own, you know, divisiveness, putting themselves in boxes, that they don't take the time for that social responsibility of mentoring the kids. Like instead, we take a hands-off approach. And no, whether it's a skill that you have in your job, you should be mentoring. You should be creating that succession plan. Whether it's something in society for your kids, you should be hands-on with them and trying to teach them right from wrong rather than just leaving it up to public school or something else.
So you worked in a first responder, a mm-hmm. public service. Was that instilled in that? Because it would seem to me like that would be a little more of a brotherhood or a sisterhood, and the olders or the more experienced, they're kind of bringing that along. Is that fair evaluation? Yeah.
Well, I think maybe even more so in my particular fire district at the time, because we were growing so fast. But it was like, you know, 1 year you have. Let's say you have a crew of four people and one of them's brand new to the fire service. The other have differing levels of experience. And so that first year, everybody's goal is to get that new guy or girl up to speed. Yeah. And then because we grow so fast, once that person hit a year, it's like, it's your responsibility now. Take what you learned because we got a new one.
Yeah.
And that person's got to figure out what's going on. And it is literal life and death in order to be able to impart this wisdom. So there were people that were still of a mentality that knowledge is power. And if I'm withholding knowledge from you, then I'm going to be able to be a better captain, or I'm going to be able to have power over the crew. And those people had disjointed and fractured crews, and they made mistakes, and they were more prone to injury. But the ones that were cohesive, that said, how can I get you the knowledge to get you to the next level? And that was the focus from every single rank. Those were the crews that were successful.
You know, knowledge is power. I love that. But I'm going to put the qualifier on there. Applied knowledge is power. Yeah. Look who just walked in the room.
Hey.
Where are we going to put him? Anton Chisholm.
We got a special guest.
We got a live in studio. Come on, slide over here.
Let me get.
Come on, slide over here, little guy.
There we go.
Come here. Let me love this guy.
How you doing?
What's up, my friend?
Hey, top of the morning to you.
Nice. Look who just joined us.
You're looking good, bro.
Trying.
Yeah. How you feeling?
I feel great.
Good.
I feel great, man. Lots going on. I just thought I'd stop by. I know you guys are doing awesome things, so I just crashed the party a little bit.
Yeah. Welcome, Anton Chisholm. I've known Anton for 16 years now.
Yep.
He had no gray when I first met him.
Oh, man.
He was taller, still. I always tell people I've known that kid since I was taller than him, but that's not true in your case. But look at you.
Hey, hey.
Innovative what? Signs. Still need a few signatures for Constable?
That yeah, absolutely. Definitely. Yeah. Thank Come you. On. Hey, votefor.chisholm.com.
Get we're, that link.
We're going to get there. Vote forchisholm.com. I love it. Hey, I wasn't expecting that, but that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're going to keep plugging everybody and everything they're doing.
All right.
That was kind of what we were talking about. You know, I'm going to follow up on this part of the conversation. It's all about culture. In the organizations or groups and stuff. I don't think as a culture, I don't think people are paying much attention to what's going on around them and how can I lift up the other people. Mm-hmm. I think you were blessed to be in an organization, a public service organization that created that culture. And I'm not saying they all do because I'm sure they don't all do it in the fire service. But I don't see culture, and you can jump in here too. We're talking about culture and lifting each other up and trying to next gen and stuff as a whole. And I hate to be a pessimist about this, but we talk about it a lot. Where's your bench? How are you? Where are you training somebody up? That was not me. That was
the special guest that doesn't know proper radio etiquette. I apologize. I'm getting on it right now.
I got roasted. I got roasted last week.
Hey, it's done. It's done. It's fixed. It's fixed.
You can't hear that, but there's a wah, 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 wah.
Yeah. Nope, I don't have a headpiece, so this is just strictly, off the cuff. Yeah.
I would have got him one, but I totally didn't know he was coming, that's on the director. I kind of knew.
I saw him out there in the parking lot, and I said, hey, Anton, come on over.
You know, what's funny is I just grabbed the wiring for the headphone set. You see it on the table right next to Anton.
The wiring's there. We just haven't wired yet.
Oh, hey, yeah. Quick, here we go. I got it.
Scott probably doesn't know this. Anton pretty much wired this whole space. All the stuff that's out there, all the stuff that's in here. Anton, in a previous life, there's an applause for you, worked for Comcast. So when I was like putting this thing together, I'm like, who do I know that? He's got his own, what they call them, wire.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The tricks to move wire through drop ceiling, frame walls. Yeah, all that stuff.
Yeah.
That was cool. It was a fun project. Watching this thing to be 2x4 studs to now what it is amazing.
We kind of went in a different direction from where we were at.
I like it. It's still an awesome direction.
It's a lot
direction.
More fun.
Yeah.
It's a lot more fun.
Yeah.
So go ahead. Those that don't know, you are running for re-election. Is it official re-election, or is it because of the way you got in, you're trying to get the signatures to?
Correct. So I'm the incumbent, right? On the ballot, hopefully, right? The primary is coming up. I need another 300 signatures. So please go to voteforchisholm.com and sign that electronically. But, I was appointed unanimously by the Board of Supervisors over one of the opponents that's running against me.
Okay.
So I'm the incumbent. I filled somebody else's vacancy. So this would be my first term as an elected official under my own name. So it's not really a re-election because I was never elected. I was appointed. And I don't want to make any kind of false claims because one of my opponents, that's what he makes sure to tell everybody. He was never elected. Well, that's very true. But I was, unfortunately for him, appointed unanimously over him. And I love to say that.
Gotcha.
Yeah, but what we really want to love to say is come primary time, he's not on the ballot. No offense to John. I'll just throw his name out there.
Yeah, okay. I wasn't going to do that, but that's okay.
But
we need Chisholm. No, that's the name you want to remember, not
Why
any other thing.
Why is there John? How many people are named John?
Hey, it's a great biblical name, but for this particular campaign, we want Anton Chisholm.
Anton Chisholm.
But
senior.
I didn't hear any of this before I got here, but you were talking about cultures. And then, Clint, you almost said something to the effect of, and I'm guessing, but I think I know you, that the culture of the young people today is that there really isn't one. The problem is that it's more of an entitlement than a culture.
You know who created that, though?
Well, quite honestly, I think that it's going to be the parents, right?
It's us.
So the parents that are no longer actively involved, actively engaged in their children's lives and in pacifying their time with maybe electronic devices or lack of actual attention, constructive attention, right? You know, when my kids were younger, you know, I was the parent that was doing their homework with them every night. Mm-hmm. And, you know, instead of just sitting and watching television set, you know, we would talk, we would play games together. We would do things like that. You know, back when my kids were younger, there weren't PlayStation 5s and mm-hmm. cell phones. I mean, I think I tried to boycott my son, Anton Jr., who's now almost 24, from getting a cell phone in the eighth grade. And I lost to my my ex-wife and my mother-in-law at the time. But, you know, even then, it was still heavily regulated, right? I mean, the apps that he had access to, the time that he was allowed to be on that phone, you know, school and that kind of stuff was the focus, right? I mean, grades first, you know, respect. I mean, I see kids now that, you know, you go to open a door for them and they just kind of look at you cross-eyed, right?
Anton, I mean, it's not kids. It's the adults. I mean, they're that. Yeah. Yeah.
I wish I was here an hour ago.
I'm not judging people by that, but my goodness, you hold the door for somebody, at least nod.
Yeah, yeah.
Anton, you can be my fill-in when I'm not here.
I just had it at the QT. I'm not making this up. The QT just the other day. Yeah. I was in full uniform because I am currently the active constable for Northwest Pima County. I opened the door at QT. I held the door for an older lady who walked by and said thank you, which was awesome. And then there was somebody that was roughly my age, I'm guessing, that I held the door for. They never even looked up. They didn't break stride. They just – and so me, even in full uniform, I said, oh, you're welcome. You know, like – come on, people, just
you got to.
A modicum of decency goes a whole long way, and it might make somebody's day a better day. They could have been having a crappy day, you know. Tell them, hey, hi, how are you doing?
It's not hard.
No.
It's not hard.
Well, and it's up to us, right, to be those examples and to set a different culture or to set a standard.
Sure.
So, and you know what? It works.
Yeah,
maybe not every door, maybe not every door, but people know, especially once they get to know you and know who you are. And you know what? If being a talker. If I'm not like on that day for whatever reason, it's usually not that I'm like, what's the matter with Clint? What's going on?
Sure.
So you can project that and you can create that around you.
Yeah. And it's contagious, right?
It is contagious.
I mean, all of us in here are smiling, right? I mean, well, Clint now he's scratching his beard, but you know, but even a smile is contagious, right?
Yeah. Somebody, it is.
You never know when somebody's having that horrible day and just you opening that door or saying hello might have just changed their entire trajectory. They may have been potentially going to do something life-changing in a negative way for themselves, and you might have just been that one person, you know?
Hey, gentlemen.
Yes.
We are 3 minutes out.
Okay.
But here's what I want to do.
Okay.
This is what I'm thinking. Okay. You guys can veto this.
Yeah.
And Anton's kind of at a disadvantage because he doesn't have headphones, which just kind of makes it funnier. But
so
I can hear you through the wall, though.
Everybody pointed Anton and laugh, right?
Yeah, is that No. So we're gonna do the unreliable and unnecessary censorship here. So as you guys can hear your conversation, just, you know, feel free to with each other
do it again.
You want me to?
Can you hear that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so as you're, we're going to do it for a minute.
Unnecessary censor.
All right.
Hey, you know what?
Okay, here we go.
I know Scott's got like six pages here.
It's all about or.
I can't hear, but I like the laughs.
It's all about organic flow, man.
Okay.
It's not and you know flow.
What? It's not part of the flow. We got three more episodes right here. Three more episodes. This is fun. Curly, Moe, and Larry.
That control room guy's got a lot going in there.
He's got a lot of power.
Yeah. But come out of that room and do it to my face, all right? Hey. Now we're all laughing.
Hey, Anton, we got to get you in that. Got to kind of get you coached up a little bit in there.
I like it.
Because David's going to be flipped. It's going to be in and out. This whole thing is going to be I don't know what. I don't know where this is going.
I don't know either. But I
didn't, all right, the time's up. Then we're done. We're through. Okay. Thank you. Okay. We're good.
Boy,
all right.
We came in kind of somber and slow.
I appreciate you guys having me, and I just wish that I knew what the real Wayne's joke was. Yeah, right?
Aurora, Illinois.
Hey, wasn't it fun, though? Come on.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Where are you at, David? Pop your face back in here one more time. There he is.
Yay.
There he is.
I am in here doing, you know, it's just working real.
himself right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm myself right now.
I love it.
That was funny.
Okay.
So, guys, quickly, if you like what you're hearing, share it with your friends and family. If you don't like what you're hearing, still share it with your friends and family.
Help us get better.
Yeah, help us get better. You got any comments? You got any suggestions? Hey, if you got money that you want to gamble on us getting you some customers, we're your guys.
Yeah.
You started out with nice gambling.
Nice plug. Right. Okay.
All right, guys, we're a minute out, so...
Wrap it up, Scott.
All right.
Well, Anton, thanks for coming and hanging out with us. We had Chris Holmgren call in, and he's got a great program going on with alternative education. And thank you for tuning in to The Drop. We are here live every Tuesday from 8 to 9:30, and with random guests that will pop in, and you never know when you will be censored, because whoever's in the director's chair has full control.
Hey, and if you're going to gamble, gamble on yourself.
Absolutely.
I like it, yeah.
All right.
Hit the door.